You know what? When you have a young man who is putting up the numbers that he's putting up, and we're able to witness something that has only been done once in league history. This isn't an everyday occurrence where a player at any position puts up a triple-double. And I think that needs to be recognized, whether it's by the fans, the players, the coaches. Russell Westbrook is the top performing player in the NBA as we speak.
Rick Bucher. He's going to be an all-star. He'll play in the all-star. He was the all-star MVP last year in spite of the fact that he came off the bench. He's doing something that no one has done since 61-62, but it's not as if there were other guys that weren't capable of it. Some of this has to do with how the game has changed.
This is the BJ Armstrong and Rick Bucher Show, starring BJ and Bucher.
Welcome to the 27th episode of the BJ and Bucher Podcast, Four Quarters of Madness. I am Rick Bucher. He is BJ Armstrong. Producer Shane Freeman is also along for the ride. Adding to the bandwagon just a little bit later in the fourth quarter, we're going to have Zaza Pachulia is going to give us the real reason he stood over Russ Westbrook, what it's going to be like when the Warriors and Thunder meet again, and his thoughts about being in the All-Star running and then ultimately not making the All-Star game. But BJ, we start in New York. We're going to get to Chicago. We're going to hit the big cities.
Oh,
yes.
Big
cities seem to be all in the news.
Yes.
Let's start with Carmelo Anthony and all of the continuing trade rumors as far as Carmelo Anthony waiving his no trade clause and going someplace else. And this idea that the Knicks have been very aggressive in looking to teams that they might be able to make a deal with. Now, that's all, you know, I think we talked about this on last week's podcast a little bit about where we were with this and how you felt with having Derrick Rose there. I just, when you look at Carmelo right now and the idea that he would be moved, where do you think at this point in his career, if he waives the no trade clause, it would make sense for him to go?
Well, I think there's only a couple places he can go. One, I think the Clippers, and I think the Lakers are the two teams I think can absorb him financially. And I think more so the Clippers than the Lakers can absorb what he's going to bring to the team at this stage of his career. You have enough veterans with the Clippers and CP3 and Blake and DeAndre that can absorb what he's going to bring and incorporate his skill set. Right now, I think Carmelo can score the basketball, he can contribute, but carrying a team night in and night out in this league, I don't think that's where he's at in his career. So I think the LA Clippers will probably be the best destination for him at this point of his career.
Now, when you look at, I was in New York a couple of weeks ago, and I had somebody who has contacts within the league and said to me, yeah, he could see, and this was early on. This was before anything was being said about mm-hmm. him going anywhere. He said, yeah, I think that worm is going to turn, essentially. I could see Melo going to the Clippers. I could see Blake Griffin going to the Celtics. And I could see, like, Jaylen Brown and a pick. Now, it gets a little complicated because you have to make the money work. But he saw a three-way deal involving the Celtics, the Clippers, and the Knicks. If you are the Knicks, and if you're Derrick Rose, what are you looking to get back at this point for a Carmelo Anthony?
You want draft picks if you're the Knicks. You want to participate in the potential of what these young players that you're starting to see. I think this draft is going to be terrific. And I think if you want really the most valuable asset in all of this, if you're the Knicks or another team trying to get involved in such a trade of a player of that caliber, you want draft picks. I think this is going to be a terrific draft. I think there's going to be some Hall of Fame type talent coming out of this draft. So I think the most valuable part to all of this will be that, and I think that's what teams are going to be looking for.
All right, let's move on to our second subject because there's a lot to get into here, and I don't even know if we have enough time to get into all of it. But essentially, the drama in Chicago with the Bulls losing to the Hawks, 19-2 closing run by the Hawks. The Bulls end up losing. Afterward, Jimmy Butler and Dwayne Wade come out of the showers and they address the media individually, one after the other. Dwayne Wade first.
Let's be clear. He was first.
He was first. And then, as I've been told, then directed the media, almost said, and Jimmy has something to say to you guys, too.
Oh, wow.
And then the entire crowd went over there. And it's important to note, I also was told, that the two of them came out of the shower together. So this wasn't just an emotional... I didn't mean it like that. It was... Yeah. I didn't mean... No, I'm going to say it because that's what they did. You are the two. You, Shane. You, BJ, are the ones with the questionable minds. Okay? Yeah, you just laughed. You were the first one to laugh. Don't put that on Shane. They appeared to have a concerted plan, that this wasn't just emotion talking. This wasn't just Jimmy Butler piggybacking off of an emotional outburst by Dwayne Wade. This was, by all appearances, premeditated. Now, subsequently, so they questioned the heart of the players. They questioned their commitment to the game, and they questioned just how much they cared. And then they even went into a little bit of know your role. Don't take shots when you're not supposed to be the guy taking the shot. Rajon Rondo put out an Instagram, and he apparently, this is what I found sort of after the fact, took counsel from Kevin Garnett in how to write that Instagram.
That's
and said
interesting.
And said, my vets in Boston would have never handled things like that. Now, since then, they played the Miami Heat. They played the Miami Heat right afterward. They lost. Fred Hoiberg called it the worst game of the season. Jimmy Butler went 1-for-13. I know I'm putting a lot on the table for you right now.
Yes, let's narrow this a little bit.
So let me just narrow it down. What does it say to you about the leadership of the Bulls that they would come out and make this statement about the young players on that team?
Well, when you say leadership, let's be very direct. Instead of talking in generalities like those two, let's just be very specific in Dwayne Wade and Jimmy Butler. Based on what I know of what I've heard, I think it was a moment of temporary insanity. I think it was a lapse there that maybe it sounded good, but then when you said it, it was like, what is this?
Mm-hmm.
What was that going to do that was going to help this team move in the direction that they needed to move in?
Right.
In particular, especially with Dwayne Wade, who I have admired from afar for many years, he's achieved in his career, but clearly this was a mistake on his behalf and should have been, maybe he should have talked this one through. I didn't see the type of leadership that I've come to expect from him. I wish he would have taken a different approach. We all were young players in this league. We all benefited from having a mentor or a veteran who pulled us to the side and said, hey, young fella, maybe this is how you should do things or consider things. You know, take myself, for example, Bill Cartwright was a great mentor to me. John Paxson, Craig Hodges, you know, those guys really helped me develop as a young player to understand what this league is all about. You know, there are so many players on that team that admire Dwayne Wade for what he's achieved in his career.
Right.
And he's at the stage of his career where, you know, you're looking for him for encouragement, not to like
beat you down,
knock him down and beat him down. So I was a little disappointed in Dwayne Wade, but life goes on and we move on. And I wish he would have taken a different approach because he's achieved so much. And I think he has so much to give that I think it could have been expressed a little differently in this situation.
And I have to ask this question, right? Because in my opinion, like I saw first LeBron was complaining about it. And him and D-Wade being former teammates, I thought to myself, how much of this is LeBron talking to?
You mean like, sort of setting Dwayne Wade up?
Yeah, exactly. Setting him up to make these kind of comments and these kind of statements. And with them two, for lack of a better term, coming out of the showers together, talking about Butler and Wade, like how much of Wade's influence was in what Jimmy Butler said? You know what I mean? Like I was questioning, wondering that. Like how much of this stuff is being kind of fueled by other people on the outside? Because I know Rondo even Instagrammed about how he talked to Kevin Garnett. So all these people are influencing each other, but how does this help any of the younger players get better?
Yeah, and I don't believe that it does. And I do believe that Jimmy was influenced by Dwayne Wade. And the distinction, see, the other question I wanted to get to, and you raised a chain in our pre-show notes, is the young players are saying, hey, Dwayne Wade doesn't practice. Dwayne Wade, you know, we don't spend any time with him. So, but I like Karl Malone and John Stockton, they would practice, but they didn't practice every night. You know, there was they practiced only as much as they had to in their older years. Now, the distinction that I see is those guys were with the same franchise. This is Dwayne Wade's first year there. They don't have any history with him. And when we talk about leadership, I mean, they've seen that leadership from afar, but and BJ, you can speak to this. It's a lot different when you hear about what a guy's like with somebody else and you respect him, but your respect, I at least for me, and this goes with anybody, is really firsthand. You can come in with a reputation and that might give you a little bit of an edge or a lead or an advantage, but then you have to, you know, essentially, if you defy what I've heard, I'm going to go based on what I'm seeing now, not what I saw or heard before.
Right. You know, in order for the Bulls to have success, Jimmy and Dwayne are going to have to take full responsibility of the team. And this moment in time for them was not their best effort. And it was, I'm just disappointed in how it was done, because I'm always pro team and figuring out things within the locker room. That's a place where it's sacred. That's a place where you have to play, and there has to be a certain amount of trust. You know, what's wrong with Dwayne Wade and Jimmy, if that's how they felt, huddling up the guys and expressing that to them? They're clearly the leaders of the team. There's nothing good that was going to come out of saying this in the media. There's nothing good.
See, I agree. And the problem that I have is, Dwayne Wade, like Jimmy Butler, I'll give him a pass. He's never been on a championship team. He's never had to be a leader before. Dwayne Wade's been through all the wars. Dwayne Wade's seen all the positives and negatives of dealing with the media or things coming out in the media. I just, for me, you can say temporary, you know, moment of insanity. I agree, but he's too experienced to have that in my mind. We have to go to the second quarter. The Twitter wars. This to me was a lot of fun. I don't know how you feel about it, BJ, but so it started with the Trailblazers, and I didn't know this originally. I just saw Chandler Parsons' response, but the Trailblazers posted a GIF after the Blazers beat the Grizzlies and Chandler Parsons. The GIF had Chandler Parsons hitting a three-pointer on Evan Turner, and the Blazers basically said, "This is not a true reflection of the game. We actually won." To which Parsons tweeted, "Trailblazers, good luck in the lottery show this year." To which Blazers guard CJ McCollum tweeted, "We hit the lottery by not signing you." Parsons replied, and then it was like, there's been a million GIFs from fans since then. Some of them very smart. One of my favorite was just a photo of a suit jacket and a fan saying, "Chandler, would you please sign your official jersey for me? Your official game jersey."
What's really funny about this is, you know, we didn't talk about Rondo's response on, you know, Instagram. And now we're talking about the Twitter.
Right.
So this has become quickly a social media, you know.
And do you like it? I mean, do you?
I really do.
Do you?
I really do. I really like
Would
it.
Would you like it if you were playing?
Right,
I mean, it's one thing to like it for the entertainment value for us. But if you were running a team or if you were playing, would you still like it?
I like it. I mean, the reason that I really like it is because, you know, you could talk trash to a guy, but you had to be face to face.
Yeah.
In my generation.
Uh-huh.
Now you can actually talk trash to him like 24 hours a day. You know, like can you imagine Gary Payton on Twitter? Imagine Gary Payton on Twitter.
Oh,
you know, imagine all of the trash talking that could be done.
Yeah.
With, you know, as long as you have a good, you know, a good sense of humor about it. I think it's great. I really like it, though.
I think the other part for me is, you know, there was a time before we had all this where players would pretend they didn't talk as much trash as they did, or they didn't get into things like this. And it's, you know, what's the funniest part is it's always been made out like trash talking is just about the game. This almost has nothing to do with the game.
Nothing.
It has to do with contracts, who's playing for who, like all of that. Like, there's more trash talked in the NBA about that. The game's superfluous. Okay, you might have won, but your girl's ugly, okay? I'm telling you, right?
No, one of the best trash talking moments for me ever was we were playing in the semifinals, and we were waiting to play the winner between the Knicks and the Pacers. And we had like one and we had like a week off and everyone wanted to play and the Knicks were and they were playing and they were playing game seven like in New York. Michael, we were practicing as the game was about to start. Michael calls the locker room in the Knicks and starts talking trash to Patrick Ewing. Like, you better win the game. Da da da. Y'all don't y'all wanna play us. We ready. And I was like, that was pretty impressive.
Yeah.
So I can't imagine the things that guys were saying. Cause we all, you know, if you call somebody on the phone, that was like a whole thing. Now, you know, for guys to have access on the social media, it is great. I just wish some of the guys, you know, Larry Bird was great at talking trash and all these guys. I just wish they had access to it so you can be entertained. I think it's entertaining.
I'll tell you one thing that I got curious about was the fact that, like, I go back and I think about when Steven Jackson and Ron ran up in the stands, you know, with the whole melee. And if this kind of social media interaction between players was taking place on Twitter, how would that fuel the naysayers of the NBA? How would that fuel their perspective of the league in terms of, you know, the social media feuds and look
That's
at how they're acting? This isn't professional. Like, does this stuff actually help the league or do you think it hurts the league?
I believe that all of it helps because you have greater access to the players and knowing who they are. Because we're really past the day and age where every athlete is heroic and we, you know, the Babe Ruth days, the days of Mickey Mantle and like when you just, you revered athletes and you thought that they weren't, you know, they were above having human issues. I think we're way past that. And I think we want to know more about them. Now, it's a double-edged sword. I do believe that you can really screw your image over and you can hurt yourself in a big way by not using media responsibly. But in a case like this, I think it only, I mean, look, next time the Grizzlies and the Blazers play, you don't think that's going to draw some ratings? You don't think people are, and previously, would have anybody cared about a Grizzlies-Blazers game?
Right.
So, like, the more you know, the more interested in general, I believe, you are. And I'm interested to find out what we're having for halftime. Take it away, Shane.
What are you doing? It's just a halftime.
Yes, this is my favorite part of the game.
All right, guys, this halftime break, the entertainment is brought to you by Bilal, featuring Common and Mos Def. And this is their song, Reminisce.
Just when I think that I forgot you, I hear that dub that we used to rock to. Just when I think I'm getting on without you, somebody passed and asked me about you. Was in the back of a cab the other day. Swear to God, I saw you walking past the other way.
Wait a minute.
My heart rushed, my face flushed. Tell the driver, hit the brakes, slow the pace up. Wait up, it wasn't you. Realize it's a mirage I was running to. Damn, can the effects of love and time cause the mind to trick the eye? I wonder how you're getting by. And all the stars still in your eyes. And do you still just get the vibe? You break the bank to spend the time. A reminisce and shift the time to when you was mine.
Years ago, in the mist of hallways and sliding doors, missing links are very, very obscure. Vision of you shine, but only for a short time. Pick up on it till years down the line. Here now as I reminisce, will I ever see your face again? Baby, as I think back, will I ever see your face again? As I reminisce,
I reminisce over this chick colder than the shoulder, a princess, a soldier raised in Islamic culture, sexy as a girl on the Jamaica poster.
Met her overseas where it really don't be no sisters. Brought her on stage as Bilal sang Soul Sister. The body
parts. All right, welcome back. Hope you enjoyed the halftime show. I am Rick Bucher. He's BJ Armstrong. And now it's the third quarter. Time to test our trivia knowledge. BJ, I believe, is on a 2 or 3 episode winning streak.
Again.
Some
here
very questionable decisions made by Shane Freeman, our producer, and how he has set it up. But nonetheless, I am acknowledging that I am 0 for the last at least 2-3 weeks. So I'm going to start here. BJ, over my career, I won Rookie of the Year, 2 league MVPs, 3 finals MVPs, made 15 all-star appearances, and won 5 NBA titles. Who am I? Tim Duncan, Shaquille O'Neal, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, or David Robinson?
I thought I had this one in the bag. Who? Give me the names again.
Tim Duncan, Shaquille O'Neal, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, or David Robinson.
I'm going to say Tim Duncan.
That would be correct. And we need to get a camera on BJ's hands from now on.
I know. BJ, what are you typing?
No, seriously. You know, because I was writing down the names, okay. because I wrote down Kobe Bryant.
Right.
Because you said 5 championships. And I was like, and then when you didn't say Kobe on the answer, uh-huh. I was like, that kind of threw me off. That's why I asked you to repeat.
Well, he only won 1 league MVP though.
Yeah, but you said the 5, and I was like,
we're giving it to you.
All right, here we go.
What do you have?
I'm known for being loyal to one team for nearly 2 decades, and my career averages are 25 points, 10 boards, and 4 assists. Who am I? A, David Robinson. B, Karl Malone. C, Patrick Ewing. D, Dirk Nowitzki.
It's not, you know what? I wrote down a different name.
I want to see your hands.
I wrote down a different name, or I had a different name in mind when you started that. Can you give me the 4 names again?
And I'm
turning here. I'm turning here to write them down on the pad. I have Dirk. I have Dirk. I have Carl.
Yeah. I have David Robinson.
David Robinson.
Karl Malone, Patrick Ewing, and Dirk Nowitzki.
Okay. And you said, how did you phrase the question? Because Shane gets tricky here now. The question's more important than the answer.
Hold on, listen.
Yeah.
I'm known for being loyal to one team for nearly 2 decades, and my career averages are 25 points, 10 boards, and 4 assists. Who am I?
Well, Patrick didn't have the assists. David Robinson, Karl Malone, Dirk Nowitzki, 25, 10. Dirk was never that kind of a rebounder. I'm going to say Carl.
That is correct.
Wow.
Spent 18 years in Utah before him, and Gary Payton took major pay cuts to join Shaq and Kobe in L.A. Why do we have that?
Well, because, that was the tricky part of it. He said nearly. Now, you could have interpreted that 2 ways, that he didn't spend his entire career with one team, or he nearly spent 2 decades with the same team.
Rick, you're really psychoanalyzing me.
Oh, no. This is Shane. This is what I realized. This is not, winning this is not about beating BJ. It's about figuring you out. That's what it comes down to. That's what I've come to understand.
All right. Here we go.
Okay. I am a 6-time All-Star, Rookie of the Year, and 2-time NBA scoring champ who scored more than 23,000 points throughout the course of my career, but I never won a ring.
Mm.
Who am I?
Okay.
Charles Barkley, Charles Oakley, Adrian Dantley, or Patrick Ewing?
Okay, you got to read this one again. Can you read it again?
6-time All-Star.
6-time All-Star.
Rookie of the Year. 2-time NBA scoring champ. And I scored more than 23,000 points over the course of my career, but I never won a ring. Who am I?
Okay.
Barkley, Oakley, Dantley, Ewing.
I'm going to say Patrick Ewing.
That would be incorrect.
No! Oh, God.
Adrian Dantley, the number 6 pick in the 1976 NBA draft, taken by the Buffalo Braves. Dantley played his finals NBA season in 1991 with the Milwaukee Bucks.
I knew that one, too. I answered too fast. I knew that one, too.
I thought that the 6-time All-Star would give it away, too.
Yeah.
For me, Oakley wouldn't have had that many.
Right.
Barkley and Ewing would have had way more.
Exactly. Right. I knew that one. I knew that I had a moment. All right, here we go. I played 20 years in the NBA before calling it quits. Over the course of my career, I won league MVP, 15 All-Star appearances, an NBA title, and Defensive Player of the Year. Who am I?
Ooh.
Shaquille O'Neal, Bernard King, Elvin Hayes, Kevin Garnett.
One Defensive Player of the Year?
Yes.
Only one?
Yes.
Okay, give me all the... I got the names. Give me the particulars again.
20 years, league MVP, 15 All-Star appearances, an NBA title, and Defensive Player of the Year.
Only one league MVP?
Yes.
It's got to be Kevin Garnett.
You got it.
That was good. I would have got that wrong.
Where would you have gone, Shane?
I would have went with Shaq. Only because I would have been listening. I would have been listening for...
But Shaq won more than one league MVP.
No, he didn't. He won one. And here's the thing. This is what would have got me. The 20 years. Because he actually played... Shaq played 19 seasons.
Yeah.
That's what would have got me. Because I would assume Shaq got defensive.
He played about 14. Okay? He was around for 19. He was around for 19. The last three were thrown out the window completely. Okay? Miami? Where was Miami? How many years did he play after Miami? Cleveland were throwing out. Boston were throwing out.
He was more of a police officer.
Yeah, I don't know what he was.
Leave my man. Leave Shaq alone. Shaq gonna have y'all little Shaq in the pool. Y'all better leave him alone.
I would like to celebrate my victory, but it's going to have to wait because coming up, a conversation that I had with Zaza Pachulia about Russ Westbrook, about being an All-Star candidate, and playing with the Golden State Warriors. All that coming up. All right, welcome to our guest for this week's BJ and Bucher podcast, Four Quarters of Madness. I am happy to be joined by the one, the only, Zaza Pachulia. Zaza, thank you so much for taking the time. Congratulations on a season that's been very rewarding so far. Even though it looks like right now you're probably not going to the All-Star game. How disappointing is that?
First of all, thanks for having me, Rick.
Sure.
Always great talking to you. Going and not going to the All-Star.
Yeah,
I'm not very disappointed, honestly. This is something that's not in my hands. This is something I can control. And I'm totally depending on the situation, and totally depending on the fans.
Right.
But all this process, all this 1 month, even last year, this year was kind of better. Obviously I got more votes. Last year was fun. This year was even more fun. It's great. Happened twice, two years in a row. Last year, if somebody was, and even I was thinking it was kind of, accident, just one and done.
Right.
This year, 2 years in a row, so it already tells me something. So, in a great situation to be. I enjoyed it. I got a lot of votes and people just supporting you, loving you, want you to be out there.
Yeah.
So it's amazing.
Well, this is the weird part, because there's people on my side of the business, or people that look at the All-Star voting and they say Zaza Pachulia was almost a starter in the All-Star game and we have to fix this because something like that shouldn't happen. And I look at you and first of all, a popular guy among his teammates, I think underrated as a player, but it's not as if you asked to be in this position. Right? You didn't ask to. I mean, as you said, you enjoy the fact that people are voting for you and that they love you and they appreciate you. But it's not as if you put yourself in a position and said, well, I should be a starter in the All-Star game, or I'm an All-Star. So how have you come to deal with this and appreciate it for what it is and not look at people who are complaining about this as somehow a negative?
Yeah, I think it's very important to, personality. And I'm I'm kind of hesitant, maybe a little bit shy to ask such a thing to the fans. Hey, guys, vote for me.
Yeah.
Even though if I had better numbers, 15-10 or 20-10, averaging. But I don't know, it's just not my personality. Beauty of all the situation is because everything happens so naturally, you know?
Right.
And it just happened itself. And that's what I'm proud of. That's why I'm enjoying it. That's why I'm, feel great about it. That's why I'm so thankful, you know, because, you know, fans just voted for me without me asking. And that's beauty of it. And,
right.
And I kind of think, you know, if I was more active and, you know, promoting myself more and asking people on social media or TV and, you know, or calling guys and, you know, getting more for me, maybe I could have made it. But, you know, there was not even one time that me doing that. And, you know, that's so special about it.
Well, and on the things that you want to accomplish as a player and as an NBA player, where does playing in the All-Star game or being an All-Star rank among your goals?
Very, very end. Because I tell you the reason why. Well, I gotta be realistic. You know, I gotta be real to everybody.
Mm-hmm.
If I had made All-Star, obviously I was going to be there and represent all this. Single votes, you know, that I received, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
All those people that voted for me, all those people wanting me to see there, my country, my team, my teammates, my organization, and my family, right? Anybody who I represent and who, you know, who wanted me to see there. So I was going to do that.
Right.
But for me, lately, and, you know, my teammates have spoken about me. My coaches have spoken about me. For me, priority always has been team, because this is the most important thing and most I care about, most I value about. Because
right.
You know, when you are successful on the court and you're a good teammate and most wanted teammate, everybody wants to play with you. Everybody's enjoying playing with you because you play the right way. You're not selfish. You care about your team and your teammates. That's the beauty of the life and of my career. Honestly, that's how I look at it. All-Star, you can be 1 year, you might miss next year, you know, or you can be a couple of years in a row, or you not make it at all. But, you know, to play basketball, it continues until you can't. So that's why, and I mean when I say in the end, I don't care about the All-Star as much. Because if fans haven't been active, mm-hmm. we would never have this conversation, right?
Sure.
But I've been playing basketball since I was 9 years old, you know, and it's my 14th year in the league. And every year I've been fighting to win the games.
Yep. Did you vote? Because the players had the opportunity to vote for the first time this year.
Yes.
And who did you vote for, if you don't mind me telling? If you don't mind telling me.
Mostly it was my teammates.
Mm-hmm.
Mostly it was my teammates. I definitely didn't vote for myself.
Did you?
Definitely not. And, you know, even for my family, my wife never did it.
Yeah.
Again, we wanted to be very natural, and that's how it was.
Got you. Now, one of the other reasons that you... did not, or that one of the reasons that you've made news recently was when you guys played the Oklahoma City Thunder and you had a incident with Russell Westbrook. First of all, just tell me what was your view of Russell as a player before the game started, going in? How do you view Russ as a player?
And I still have the same view about him. Nothing changed, even after the incident.
Mm-hmm.
Incidents happen, and goals. And we're not the first ones, and we're not going to be the last ones.
Right.
He's always going to be out there. So I think he's a terrific player, amazing player, very exciting to watch, you know, plays very hard every single game, honestly.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes he's scoring a lot, sometimes he's having triple-doubles, sometimes he's not, but... he's playing hard every single game, so I have, you know, a lot of respect of his game, whatever he does. You know, he has certain different, you know, mindset,
mm-hmm.
approaching to the game, and he's doing his best.
Now,
it's amazing the guy averaging triple-double. I mean, I heard about Oscar Robertson have done it before, But I've never seen anybody averaging triple double since I've been playing in the NBA. So first time I witnessed that, and you know it's very hard to do. And you know this guy is doing it. So that's what I was thinking before, and that's what I'm thinking now as well. Now regarding the incident, though, you know we had a foul to give in that situation. And they ran a pick and roll coverage. I ran out there because you know he's so explosive. If he start coming at you, then you know, it's hard to stop him.
Sure.
So I just wanted him not to get that acceleration and you know get that the power from the beginning and start, you know foul him above the 3-point line. So you know he was running towards me. I was running towards him. So you know kind of collision happened, and I made sure that you know we take a foul because we had a foul to give, and it was only couple seconds left to the end of the first half.
Right.
I kind of thought I stole the ball, but again, because of the collision, the referees called the foul, and suddenly he fell down. And, you know, yesterday actually I mentioned that, you know, prior to the play, actually, he elbowed me.
Right.
I don't know if he meant to elbow me or it was accident, but anyways, you know, it happens. And, you know, then next play I foul him because we had foul to give.
Right.
And it appeared that he was on the ground rolling around. I don't know if he faked it. To me, it didn't look that kind of hard foul for him to, you know, to start rolling around. But, you know, that's his call. That's his choice, right? You know, he's he knows better what happened, what he did.
Why did you look down at him the way that you did afterwards?
You know, I was just up there. First of all, I was shocked. First small thing I thought to myself, I was shocked that because I didn't think it was that kind of hard foul that he, you know, he fell down and he, you know, everybody thought that, you know, he got injured.
Yeah.
That was my first reaction. Then I thought about the elbow that right. he elbowed me.
Right.
And, you know, a couple of things went through my mind and, you know, I was just staring at him and then I just walked away.
Now, he says, I'm going to get his ass back. That's what he said about that foul. What's it going to be like for you the next time you play the Thunder? Because I'm sure you heard that or saw that too, right? His reaction?
Yeah, I saw it, obviously, thanks to you guys and your colleagues. Everybody just rushed to me and then, you know, gave me this information. No, that's his comments. And He knows better. I have no control of it, and I don't care either because I'm going every game, and the OKC game is one of those games where I'm going to go and play basketball, help the team to win a game.
Yeah.
I'm not looking to the fight. I'm not looking for anything special. It's going to be an emotional game. First of all, KD's going back home.
Yep.
And, you know, I guess I'm going to share some of the bulls with KD. So it's another way to show and prove that I'm a good teammate.
There you go.
Because I don't want to put a lot of pressure on KD. So I'm going to take some of the responsibilities.
That's fantastic. Well. And I'm glad you brought me to that, because before I let you go, I did want to ask you just about joining this Warriors team. I don't know if it's the best team you've ever played with, but I wonder what this experience playing with this team has been like compared to your previous experiences in the NBA.
Yeah, it's totally different, Rick. And, you know, one of the main reasons why I joined this team and one of the things was I was expecting was experience, you know, experience to play with this many superstars, experience to play with great coaching staff, amazing fan base. And the team has a great chance to win a championship. So thinking about all these things made me, you know, and obviously talking to Coach Kerr made me make the decision very easily. So, you know, things are going the way I was thinking and expecting. Learned a lot, saw a lot and different things. And it still goes on. You know, I'm enjoying it. I'm very into it. I'm committed. And it's a great ride so far.
Yeah. Well, it's been a pleasure to watch you play throughout the years. And I've always known you through your teammates, how appreciated you are for the little things that you do. And I love the fact that you are being recognized by the fans for whatever reason, enjoying your personality and the way you approach the game. Ed, the feeling is mutual as far as I always enjoy the opportunity to talk with you and to see you. And I want to thank you again for joining us here on the podcast.
Thanks, Rick. Thanks for having me anytime.
You got it. All right. Hope you enjoyed that conversation with Zaza Pachulia. Remember, if you are listening to us on iTunes, be sure to subscribe to the show so that you don't miss an episode. You can always rate and leave a review. We'd love to hear what you have to think. And you can also check out our brand new website, bjandbuecher.com. We are now putting up original material aside from the podcast. I'm writing for it. We're going to have players writing for it, giving their views of things. All that and more. It's bjandbuecher.com. And of course, you can always follow us on Twitter, BJ and Buecher. Thanks a lot for listening, and we'll be back at you next week.